Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. You know, I just as we were getting ready to start this, you had somebody knock on the door, and you sounds like you're getting ready to do replacement windows. And a big red flag went up for me.
Yes. I'm glad you shared with me some of that red flag.
Yeah. I don't recall the outcome of the cases I worked on. I was an expert witness on class action suits. And the short story of it was that the companies made windows, the contractors installed. I didn't get involved with all of the finger pointing and blaming of one person or another and, you know, on and on and on. I got involved with how the companies made sure that their windows would meet their warranty claims. And so in both cases, they did some industry standard tests, which, in my opinion, were sorely lacking. And as any of our listeners know, is I almost always go after, well, what's the failure mechanism? How will this thing fail, right? And in both these cases, they were using an adhesive to join the corners of the window. The adhesives would age pretty quickly and became brittle with motion, just through normal thermal cycling on most any window, would crack and then would create a great path for leaking. And it was hard for me to fathom how they did not know that. Yet the counter argument was, well, we met the standard. What else can we do? And so that's my warning to you, is make sure when you look at the, if you're doing replacement frames on the windows, make sure you look at how they're attached and how they thought through building the seams in the corners. That's the weak spot in these windows. So that's my warning.
Okay. All right. I'm taking notes diligently.
Right. But it brings up a much larger issue, which we all, even our listeners, have to deal with, is, well, is this, you know, is the standard enough? Here's our specs. Let's just design the spec. And we talked about that. We need a margin, mm-hmm. right? But here's an industry standard. And I think I could fill 20 minutes with stories of people that have done that in all kinds of industries and have been sorely mistaken and learned it the hard way.
Yeah, I think there's, let me tell my story first, and then I've got a ton of some thoughts about this because I feel very strongly about this subject. And early in my reliability career, when I started out in reliability testing, this was door testing of vehicles mm-hmm. in the early 80s. And we had to meet, obviously, you have to meet regulatory standards. So there's all kinds of federal regulations on structure and you know, the vehicles and this type of thing. It's called FMVSS, Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards.
Right.
And we had to meet those. And certain people would say that's our job, is to meet those regulations. And we would then design, develop, test products that met those standards, but they weren't necessarily reliable from a customer point of view.
To use a hypothetical, and I don't know if it's close to the truth or not, but if as a person in a vehicle, you know, the industry safety criteria, I would hope would be that if I go around a corner at 30 miles an hour, that my door sitting next to me doesn't just open. So
right.
the latch strength, you know, that it holds that closed position, even under some loads, right? And vibration and everything else. And I'm sure there's tons of other requirements, but I can imagine that you would set up a test then that would say, all right, we're going to put it under these loads and this much tension or torque or vibration or bending or moment, whatever it is that would simulate that criteria, and then you'd measure it and say, oh, well, it needs to be at 4 newtons and we're at 4.1 newtons. We're good, right? Right. We got margin. We're actually above the spec. And I think that's the point, though, is that if you do it once and do it on 3 samples from 3 lots, well, you're getting after the variability of manufacturing, maybe, or you're doing, you know, the design is meeting that requirement. Yet, what if it ages? What if it deteriorates? What if it comes brittle? What if it gets dirty or dusty? You know, did you evaluate your doors with bugs and debris and small insects and rodents and, you know, dust, rain, ice, you know, all of those conditions to see how it affected it?
And what if the standard itself is not adequate?
Oh, well, heaven forbid, there was a committee that did that. That doesn't happen.
I've been on many standards committees for many, many years, and standards committees are constantly evolving, and they're improving standards, and there's a lot of good things. And I don't mean to question the viability or the efficacy of standards. The point I'm saying is that standards are not necessarily perfect. And to me, the requirement for a company that's introducing a product and the requirement for reliability engineers that are involved with companies is you need to do 2 things. You must meet regulatory standards because that's the price of being in business. You can be shut down or be heavily fined, what have you. So you must meet standards and your products must be safe and reliable. And those 2 things don't always coincide.
That's right.
And so I want companies to do both.
Yeah. And, you know, back to the door latch standard, it's in my experience working with standards committees and committees in general is that we don't have budgets to go run characterization tests. We don't have budgets. And so we bring our collective knowledge together and we have to compromise and come to a consensus that this is the number we're going to use. Right. It may be on the low end that we all can do. It may be on the high end because the committee feels that it's important to set a high standard for it or high bar for it. The trouble is that that's usually based on what is the current technology. And then the standard goes through reviews and edits and comes out a couple of years later. And the technology may well have moved on. Right. And it may not apply at all anymore. That's one of the things I run into with standards all the time is that we, like in the Windows scenario, if it was an insert and it made a mechanical seal, that's great, right? And the standard was created to do that. If there was a mechanical seal, it would stay sealed. And if the seals that were originally designed for the standards, at least the ones I got involved in, accommodated the motion of the frame in the window. And so it maintained a seal even when it moved. It was, think of it as like a gasket, essentially. Well, if you take the gasket out and use an adhesive that doesn't accommodate the motion, you can still pass the test because the original test was done not even thinking about the motion because that was never an issue. Right. So it wasn't, if it was assembled correctly, it would work. So the test was designed to evaluate, was it assembled correctly? And that was it. It didn't care about the attendant damage later. So the standards themselves often miss their, I think, bigger opportunity by saying, well, this is the conditions under which it applies, this material set, this type of technology, and so on. Too many standards don't even mention those things and just say, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And to carry that to a different dimension, but the same thread that you're looking at there is you may have conditions of use that the standards committee has considered for an application in a certain region, and then they publish a standard, and they don't maybe clearly enough define what those conditions of use are in a specific region. Then somebody takes that product and puts it into a different region. For instance, maybe it was designed in the United States, or the standard was for the United States, and then the product gets applied in Northern Canada. And you have a you know, where it's much colder than the conditions of use in the United States.
That's right.
Or another example is it's designed and the standard applies to an area that's humid. And then you take it into the desert right. and apply it.
Right.
So,
yeah, and that's, I think that's a part of what separates it. If you need to meet the regulatory parts or your customers expect these particular set of standards, that, I think what you are alluding to earlier is not sufficient if you're trying to make a safe and reliable product. It goes back to what you and I talk about all the time is, well, how is it going to fail? What are your failure mechanisms? What are the risks that are facing your product? How is it going to age or change over time or with use? And how does that present itself? And then how well do we understand those things, right? Just putting it in a chamber for 1,000 hours at the minimum sample size that the standard calls for does not equate a 15-year life. I'm sorry. They don't tell you how to equate that. They just say, here's a pass-fail criteria. You know, that most standards say, do this, and you've passed this standard. But they make no claims that it's going to be good for your product and your technology with your customers.
Yeah, this is very important for reliability engineers to understand, which is I always start with, you know, what are the requirements? What are the anticipated uses? This type of thing. How do we make the product so it's reliable? How do we test it so that we've confirmed that it's reliable? And in addition to that, how do we make sure that it meets regulatory requirements?
Yeah.
But if somebody shortcuts that and says, here's our product, let's make sure it meets regulatory requirements and then we're done, that is way insufficient.
Well, you know, the breakdown comes into an understanding of what those requirements are about. Now, some requirements are in response to other, you know, problems that occurred. I'm thinking of the tires that blew out, right, and the rollover problems. I'm drawing a complete blank of the details of it. Or, you know, the child seat attachment is not sufficient. So then the standard comes up saying it has to be this strong. It has to meet these requirements and under these conditions. And on and on and on, there's all these different things that are oftentimes a response to or a known risk. And those are fine. And those are things that, that's a criteria for our design. And we're collectively doing this lessons learned database through the standards bodies, through the regulatory agencies. But sometimes as we've been saying, it's just not sufficient. What if if we can meet the requirements today under the current way it's being tested, but our material is fundamentally different than what was used before, right? We're going to a lower cost material, or we're going to a new innovative attachment method or whatever. And that wasn't part of the criteria. It doesn't behave the same. We have to understand the failure mechanisms of what we're trying to make safe and reliable, which is a different objective. Then do we meet regulatory requirements? The confusion comes in, if we just meet the regs, we can market it, therefore it must be safe. Well, even if you have a UL stamp on the side of your product, it means that it's safe from somebody being electrocuted from frayed cables or bad connectors and poor design that makes it a hazard. It doesn't mean that it's going to work.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Just because I have a standard stamp on it doesn't mean it's a good product. It just means I met these threshold for this specific set of criteria.
Let's broaden it because we've said, and I think we both articulated pretty clearly our view that meeting regulatory requirements is necessary but not sufficient. And let's broaden it to include meeting the test requirements that you have in your company.
Yeah.
Because those might also be, of course, they're necessary if they're correct, but they may not be sufficient. And this is why a good FMEA, for example, will not only look at the potential deficiencies in the design, it'll look at the potential deficiencies in the tests.
Yep.
And so that you can improve the tests to meet the anticipated requirements, not just meet the test that happened to be in the file cabinet.
That's right. It reminds me of a client years and years ago that was making the barcode scanners that the luggage handlers use at the side of the plane, right? So they get a cart, rolls up, and they scan every bag as they put it on the plane, and they scan bags as they come off the plane, usually in the other order. They unload and then they reload it. And they have this little pistol grip barcode scanner. Now, some of them put it on a tether. Some of them have a holster. But I knew I was working with this client and I had already been familiar with their product, and I'm flying up to see them. So I luckily sat on a window seat where right above where they were loading the luggage and got out my phone and videotaped them, dropped that thing about 8 times. and then when it was done, he threw it about 20 feet into the back of his little tug that he was using, you know, and it rattled around in this metal container in the back of his tug. And I was like, you know,
oh, yeah.
You know, the client was saying, we're going to use this drop standard that's, you know, 3 times in each face from 3 feet onto concrete. All right.
Yes. Well, this is anticipating loads from start to finish. For example, I was working with a wind turbine company, and the problems that they were seeing were not related to the design of the wind turbine in operation. Mm-hmm. It was on the transport from the original assembly area to the field.
Oh, and I'm sure it was on beautiful, smooth roads all the way out there.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. And so that the transport equipment and the mounting surfaces and all of that, those loads are really important.
Yeah.
And so you have to anticipate the environment from soup to nuts, A to Z, however you want to, whatever metaphor you want to use, to design a robust product. So that we're just expanding the subject a bit. But the theme here is that always your mission as reliability engineer and as a design engineer and system engineer is to design a safe and robust product. And by the way, it has to meet regulatory requirements.
That's right. You know the transportation testing people go to standards all the time because they just don't want to take the time to go measure the loads and vibration for their packaging in their, just put it in a truck if you're going to truck deliver it and go drive around, you know.
Yeah.
Is quick and easy. You get some data and you can prove to yourself very, very quickly that the vibration in loads and the standards are just inadequate to what our product is going to see in so many cases. And sometimes it's a complete overkill. But blindly believing the standard is going to have you covered, what if it's transportation or environmental conditions or use conditions or whatever.
Or the repairs or servicing or maintenance and the loads that they can incur.
Oh, yeah. It's that if the attitude you're facing is just meet the regs, just meet these standards the customer expects, and let's not do anything else because that's too expensive. You've got to have a good discussion with those decision makers to go, here's where your risk is. Here's what you're giving up. Here's what you're facing. And have your homework in place, because there's just, for Carl and I get called into companies and it's always an emergency, they're in a big bad place in the market and all those things. And it traces back to, well, we met the spec, we met the standard.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's not good enough.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's sufficient.
You know, to leave it as rather than just this warning that we're broadcasting out there is the standards and the regulatory stuff, besides being in many cases a requirement to be in the market, is a good starting place for the types of stresses and loads and the types of conditions that your product may have to see. Now, you have to take it the next step and say, how do those stresses and loads and conditions translate to my product? How do they manifest as failure mechanisms? And are they relevant or not relevant? And then I'd say on top of it is, what are they missing? What are the the stresses and phenomena that affect this technology in this application, which the standards don't address.
And how do we anticipate the customer will use the product or possibly misuse it, as we talked about in another podcast? And let's decide how the product's going to be robust in all the different applications that we anticipate in the market that it's going into, and not put blinders on that it's good enough if it just meets the regulatory or even the company test
internal specs
procedures.
I think we should come back and talk about it again. Is that, you know, test the failure, understand your margins. You know, there's a bunch of good practices.
You
might start with standards and regulatory requirements, then move on. You know, go way beyond those whenever and however you can. It's so anybody out there hear themselves in this discussion that you're just using the standards and that's good enough. Give us a shout, you know, let us know over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You know, is that the world you're in? And hopefully this sparked a little bit of maybe some additional questions, or how do you get out of this role or this phenomena of just meet the regs and that's it. What hurdles, what barriers are you seeing? You know, those would be great questions to focus in on and discuss on the podcast. So we'd love to hear what challenges you're facing. Or if you've got a great story, I know Carl and I could probably fill up a couple more episodes full of just stories from places we've been at and experienced that have run into these problems. Unfortunately, we also got involved as expert witnesses in cases where the one of the parties just used a standard and thought they were good, and they weren't. And so it can get into class action
that
suits.
That can be one of the consequences. Yes.
Right. You know.
Well, great conversation, Fred.
Right, and good luck with your windows. please check out the corners.
I will check out those replacement frames.
Right, okay. Great. Thanks, Carl. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.